everyone. My name is Katie Ho, and welcome to the Gender Movement, an awesome platform where we, yes, including you, share a series of talk with some of the incredible tourism professionals all over New Zealand on their personal and career journeys, and best of all, challenge their honest takes on what is going on in the industries. So put on your jandals and let's join the movement behind the great mahi of Aotearoa tourism. Hi everyone, and welcome back to another episode of the Gender Movement Podcast. Wow, I can't believe this is the third episode already. Seriously, you need to give a pat on my shoulder. Good job, Katie. Today, we're having a very special sweet guest, a true compassionate girl boss of volunteer tourism and social entrepreneurship, Eliza Raymond. She's the co-founder of Good Travel, a social enterprise working globally to transform the tourism industry into a force of good. She has carried a wealth of knowledge and experience in global citizen empowerment, entrepreneurship, and currently pursuing her PhD in tourism at Victoria University. So together, we sat down and uncovered the world of voluntourism and also share her insight into the latest research on student confidence and the future of tourism. So let's just jump right into that. Eliza, good morning.
How are you?
Yeah, I'm good. So glad to see you again.
You too. So nice to see you. I was just thinking, oh, I need to do my hair and get myself organized. And then I was like, oh, it's a podcast. I don't need to worry.
Yeah,
that's so quite nice, actually.
Oh, that's so good. Yeah, I literally just tucked my hair in, put on like a random black dress, and I was like, all right, let's just do it.
Ready to go.
Hope you have a great New Year's and all the Christmas time with the family as well. When I first listened to you during the competition, I was like, she must have really interesting background because from what I see, you have such a big portfolio that focus a lot on sustainable travels and like you have such a deep passion for it. And I was like, what is your story behind it? Like everything revolved around it, your study and also, you know, your entrepreneurship aside that as well. So yeah. But I noticed that you have a British accent. British accent.
I do.
Yeah, and I was so amazed. I was like, wait, I want to know about your personal life though. And I was like how did you end up in New Zealand and how long have you lived here?
Well, it's quite a long story, so I'll try and keep it short. But basically, when I was 18, I left the UK and took a gap year, which many British students do, basically an OE. And I went to volunteer at an orphanage in Guatemala. And it was sort of, you know, what a lot of gap year students did, and with very, very good intentions, I guess. But what I realized when I was there fairly quickly is that, you know, I didn't speak Spanish, I didn't have much childcare experience, and actually, you know, it wasn't at all appropriate for me to be volunteering in an orphanage in Guatemala. And obviously since then, that was, gosh, more than 20 years ago, there's been a lot of advocacy around actually the problems that volunteering in orphanages can cause, and some great campaigns to raise awareness around why you shouldn't volunteer in orphanages. But anyway, that was kind of my introduction into kind of traveling with good intentions, I guess, but perhaps the lack of awareness about how to translate those good intentions into actions that genuinely benefit a destination. So fast forward a few years, I did my undergrad at Otago in geography, and then I decided to do my master's looking into best practice in volunteer tourism. So that's kind of where my background has been, as in the volunteer tourism sector. So specifically, I would say commodified volunteer tourism. So I'm not talking about kind of VSA and Peace Corps. I'm talking about, you know, people paying to go and volunteer in a community, typically in a low-income country, and feel good about themselves and try to have a positive impact. So that's kind of where my background was, and I worked for a number of large volunteer tourism organizations after my master's degree. And then I think it was really the turning point was in, it was 2010, the big earthquake, you'll remember it in Haiti, which devastated Haiti. And I was working for the Global Volunteer Network at the time. And our phones just rang off the hook for about a week with people, predominantly Americans, but people from all over the world wanting to go and volunteer in Haiti. And pretty much like I myself have been going to volunteer in Guatemala, you know, really genuinely wanting to help. But the way that they wanted to help wasn't actually going to benefit Haiti. And at the time, our organization, we accepted everyone who wanted to volunteer. And it was my job to then try and establish the volunteer program in Haiti and put these good intentions into some kind of use. And it was really challenging. And it just kind of made me realize that, you know, in some situations, yes, volunteering can be fantastic, but in other situations, actually, when you visit a country, it can be better to acknowledge that, you know, you're not the expert, you're coming to learn, you're coming to contribute financially. And that's kind of where good travel developed from, is really trying to rethink, you know, how can we channel these good intentions into a way that genuinely benefits destinations, and really kind of starting with the destination and what is it that they want and they need, and then thinking about how visitors can contribute towards that. So that's, yeah, how good travel evolved. And we started in 2013, but it was very much, you know, a passion project when it started. We are four women co-founders from four continents, all good friends. And we all had other jobs to start with, and we're kind of doing this on the side and figuring things out as we went along. And over the time, it has grown into, yeah, a viable social enterprise, which has been fantastic, although obviously not quite so viable over the past 9 months, but hopefully we'll be getting back into things soonish.
That's so cool, because like, oh my God, I love the topic of volunteers tourism, because I also realized how much of an impact right mindset has to come to a certain destinations, because I myself from Vietnam as well, so I have seen all the Westerners coming into the countries, and they sort of have this, do you agree if they sort of have this white saviors mindset? Yeah, and also, what do you think, like, in what way are they not like helping a destination?
I think what you're saying is totally one of the biggest issues I had with it is associated with that. So the whole power dynamic, particularly with volunteers from high income countries that are being sold experiences where they're being told that they're going to save the country or help these people. So they are coming in with that mindset, and in some cases through no fault of their own, but through kind of the marketing of these large volunteer tourism organizations. And so they're coming in with that expectation that they can help. And then obviously on the host community perspective, they know what they need. They have the solutions to their problems, but so often, you know, it is a question of needing some additional financing, for example. And so that was kind of the biggest issue that I was facing with volunteer tourism personally, was that whole power dynamic that came with it. And then, of course, there's specific types of volunteer tourism, like orphanage volunteering, which are causing huge negative impacts. I don't know if you've heard of Rethink Orphanages. It's a global movement, and they've basically found that I think it's 80% of children living in orphanages are not actually orphans. So they have a living parent. But because orphanages are so easy to fundraise for and to have volunteers come and help in, so many orphanages have basically been set up to cater for demand, but from the volunteer side of things. And then, of course, they're able to offer, you know, good nutrition and often better education. So parents are choosing to put their children into these orphanages and children's homes. And so it's really created this kind of dependency, but also, you know, taking children out of their homes, whereas that money could be far better invested into supporting families to look after children in their own homes. So there are some serious concerns with specific types of volunteering as well. But that's not to say that all volunteer tourism is bad, and I think it can, you know, it can be done really well, particularly when it's being led by nonprofit organizations that are based in the country and are not trying to kind of do volunteer tourism programs all over the world, or organizations that, you know, have fantastic local partners. And again, like, I'm not talking about like volunteer service abroad, which I see as very, very different and is very much, you know, community led and long term and seeking skilled volunteers. So I think that it's important to differentiate there as well.
Yeah,
I could go on about volunteer tourism for a while, because that's what I did my master's research in as well. But it's a really interesting topic. And there's been some quite interesting articles too since COVID about the impact of COVID on the volunteer tourism sector, and how, you know, this is really an opportunity to rethink how we rebuild volunteer tourism in a way that genuinely benefits destinations as well.
I love the topic that you're talking about as well. It's so fascinating for me, because in what way have you managed to bridge the gap between adjusting the mindset from the volunteer's perspective and also collaborating with the right partners in the destination? So have you managed to do that?
Yeah, so I mean, predominantly with Good Travel, we don't do volunteering. And our focus is rather on coming in as guests and as learners. And so we always include a minimum of $100 donation per traveler to a local project. And we will, if appropriate, visit that project. So it's a chance for the travelers to still learn about, you know, great local nonprofit initiatives and to see how their donation is supporting that project. But we typically wouldn't volunteer at that organization. But there are exceptions to that. And we have done particularly like environmental volunteering for the day or that kind of thing, where, you know, it can be genuinely helpful for a destination. And in New Zealand as well, I think when volunteers visit high-income countries like New Zealand, that's also a little bit different, right? So we will have groups here. A group came to my family home and did native tree planting, because my parents are regenerating a whole section of land into native bush. And that was, you know, something really meaningful for the travelers and genuinely beneficial for the environment, and a way to kind of create that connection and help them feel like they have a small but lasting legacy in New Zealand and can come back and visit their trees and that kind of thing. So there is, you know, I think there is ways that you can do it well. And then your other part of your question was around local partnerships. So yeah, Good Travel does operate globally. And so we do, I mean, we have our four co-founders are from Peru, South Africa, the US, and then myself in New Zealand. And so we primarily focus on the destinations where we are from, and so we have, you know, existing partnerships, but we do also operate in some other destinations where we have lived, or we have really great partnerships with local organizations that kind of take care of the in-country part. But certainly a lot of research goes into each of our trips and our itinerary design and that kind of thing. And a big piece as well is around the pre-departure. So, you know, how are we building the kind of mindset that we want our travelers to have when they arrive in country? So we have a lot of, you know, social media interactions and webinars and things like that, where we can talk through some of these issues.
Oh, wow. I love that the really small little things, like raising plants around your family house and stuff, is such a small detail, but really good intentions. And you hit the point where it's the mindset of the volunteers that they would love to leave the legacies in a certain destination. And that's definitely the incentives that they receive from volunteers tourism. Because from what I see, from my experience, so recently in my home country, so we just had a flood incident in the central of Vietnam, And yeah, so there's a big casualties and stuff going on around in the destinations, and a lot of people decide to volunteer for that. But because of the lack of communications and the needs between the locals and the volunteers, so there's this weird assumptions, like the volunteers just come there and they'll just give out instant noodles to the locals because they think the locals might need instant noodles. But in fact, they might need essential products like sanitaries, other essential like nutritions instead of just instant noodles. But instead, there's a big influx of supplies from the volunteers, but it did not meet with the needs from the locals, and there was a clash there.
That's a good example as well of, you know, all the staff that gets donated, particularly after emergency situations, right? And I don't know if you've heard of the Council for International Development. They're a nonprofit based in Wellington, but that kind of provide advice and support for international development organizations in New Zealand. And they've just been running a really great campaign encouraging Kiwis, like after an emergency situation and when there's high, you know, need for humanitarian assistance, encouraging Kiwis not to donate stuff, but rather to donate money and allow, you know, the local organizations on the ground to then purchase what is actually needed. But it's the same thing, right? It's like people with good intentions, but just providing that information to help them turn those good intentions into actions which are genuinely helpful. But I think, I mean, the other aspect of volunteer tourism, which we've tried to bring into Good Travel, is the community connection side as well. Because I think, you know, one of the great things about volunteering is you often do it alongside local people or with local people. And so that is also a huge benefit of travel and particularly international travel is, well, Gina talked about it actually. I was listening to Gina's podcast that you did with her and how, you know, tourism can be a great way to bridge cultures, to shift perspectives, to increase tolerance. Certainly that doesn't always occur, but I think that's a big focus of Good Travel is, you know, how can we build friendships across different cultures? And so we try to build that into our itineraries as well. And so in New Zealand, for example, we have our groups do a trip with Waka Abel Tasman, which is a Māori-owned tour operator in near Motueka in the Abel Tasman National Park. And they do these fantastic trips out on the water. And our good travellers have the opportunity to really learn about Māori culture. And also we include the donation, which then goes to the local Motueka Waka'ama Club to help youth participate in Waka competitions around New Zealand. And so it's, you know, again, that chance to connect, but also give back in a way which is meaningful.
Oh, that is so sweet. Yeah. I love that the way that you operate in New Zealand as well and how you contribute back to the Maori communities in that. But I mean, from your experience, maybe way before the COVID, you have managed to operate on the international scale. So have you ever encountered any difficulties like on such a large scale like that in terms of research and how to manage partners around and stuff like that? Because for me, it's...
Definitely. Yeah, absolutely.
Has it been on like 12 countries from what I see on the website?
Yeah, that sounds about right. So we've done trips to Iceland, Tanzania.
Oh, wow.
Democratic Republic of the Congo. That was a challenging one. To Virunga National Park to support the mountain gorillas. It was amazing, but it was, quite a high risk destination. Then Peru. We've done quite a lot to Peru. That was our first ever good travel trip. We're asked quite a few to Thailand, Bali, Fiji. Yeah, that's just a few off the top of my head. I would say that the most challenging ones have been where we don't have a co-founder already. And so, you know, there's a lot of research that needs to be done up front. And Bali was one example where, you know, we hadn't even been to Bali. And so, and obviously there are a lot of issues with tourism in Bali. So we really wanted to ensure we were abiding by Good Travel's vision and values. But at the same time, we were a startup and we didn't, you know, in that case, have the opportunity to do a full kind of scoping trip before we led our trip there. And so we partnered with some really beautiful resorts that had been accredited through EarthCheck, which is a very well-regarded global certification system, particularly for accommodations. So we knew the accommodations were good, but the tours that we did were also organized by the accommodations and were very much what we try to avoid with Good Travel. So it was definitely a learning experience, and we were very open with our travelers, you know, that this was our first time to do a trip there. This was, you know, elements of it were not what we had expected. And interestingly, the travelers didn't pick up on it. They thought it was great. But, you know, some of the markets we visited and things like that were, you know, it's not kind of the real local way that we would have wanted to do it. But I think that was a really good learning experience for us. And since then, we have really tried to focus in on the destinations where we do have those existing really strong partnerships. Or if we're developing into a new destination, really taking the time to visit that destination and get to know it. But yeah, there's been lots of learning experiences along the way, as there should be. And we're the first to acknowledge that the concept of doing good is constantly evolving, like our definition for good travel is constantly evolving, and we're constantly learning along the way as well. And I think that's really, really important to do that and to acknowledge that. And particularly with COVID at the moment, I mean, what are our trips going to look like when they come back? And that's a big conversation we're having at the moment as well.
That is so cool. So normally, who would be your target consumer when you organize trips and arranging people to go to those destinations?
Because of the way we kind of started, everything has been quite organic. And so we've developed primarily through partnerships. So we will partner with an organization or a group and put together a trip for them. And so most common traveler to date would be an African-American woman, probably in her 40s or 50s, probably from New York and the surrounding area. So that has been very much by chance, because on our very first trip that I mentioned to Peru, we had this incredible woman called Valerie Thomas, who is a life coach from New York. And she loved what Good Travel was about and has done so many trips with us since and brought, you know, her clients on the trips. And so she's been a huge advocate for what we do and for raising awareness for what we do. And so most of our clients have been repeat clients or referrals through word of mouth and that kind of thing.
Oh, that is so sweet. For me, when I look at the country list, I was like, that is such a diverse list of countries, because they share a big difference in like the cultural aspect and sometimes in political aspects as well, in all that kind of stuff, because those elements combine, it affects the way that you operate business and how you expand. But what is your visions about post-pandemic for Good Travels?
Yeah, so I mean, we've always had three kind of parts to Good Travel. So our trips, which is what we're, you know, brings in the income for us normally, and then our advocacy, and then our research. And since the pandemic, we've done more around kind of the advocacy and research side, which has been really, really interesting. And you know Josie Major, who's been our intern for the past year or so, and so she's been doing a big research project in New Zealand, thinking about, you know, what do we want tourism to look like when international tourism to look like when it returns here, and what can we learn from the past 9 months. And so that's been something really interesting, and we would love to do more of that. And as I mentioned, I'm starting my PhD as well, so I'm hoping that will really support good travel as well, and link into to a lot of the work that we do, and inform the way that we develop our trips as well. So yes, I mean, in terms of the trips, once we are able to relaunch them, so we're currently not advertising trips. We've kind of, you know, gone back and forward. Should we launch some for say 2022? But we, at this stage, we're just holding, and when things become clearer, we will launch some trips. So our dream is to be able to create our own itineraries, which might be themed around certain issues, which would relate specifically to the host country. So for example, in Peru, we work with a really incredible women's empowerment organization called Peruvian Hearts. So we would love to do a trip focused on gender equality in Peru, and really how tourism can contribute to gender equality. And so every step of the itinerary would be designed around that. In other destinations, for example, we would love to do a trip which is 100% waste free, for example, and really give travelers an opportunity to also reflect on their own lifestyles at home and through the experiences that they gain when they travel. So that's kind of our long-term dream, is to have these themed trips that we can put out to the world and have people sign up for, and off we go. So that's why we've been focusing on building our community and you know, loyal followers that will be excited about these kind of trips when we're ready to go.
Oh wow, that's so sweet how you target at all the niche little aspects of travel as well, in terms of like, yeah, gender inclusions and all that kind of stuff. It's such a sweet idea. But yeah, I mean, it's so great from what I see. Your company is such a good example of what social entrepreneurship is all about as well, for anyone that wants to follow the same path as well. And especially, and what is your number one lesson that you would give to the people out there? Well, the young people.
Yeah, so I guess your first question around perhaps upcoming graduates that are considering getting into social entrepreneurship or starting their social enterprise. Interestingly, I was supporting Dr. Ina Reichenberger at Victoria University of Wellington. She was conducting a piece of research around current tourism students' perceptions of tourism education and careers, and particularly in light of COVID. And one of the findings from that research was that several students that we interviewed are quite interested in starting their own company in tourism, either immediately upon graduation, but lots of them kind of further down the track. That's kind of their long-term goal. And also many of the students that we spoke to talked about, you know, the impact of COVID on the tourism industry, but also the opportunity that it presents to rethink the tourism industry. And they were really talking about sustainability and how to build back better, which was really encouraging. I felt, as kind of the next generation of graduates, that was really front and center for them. And so I do think that kind of bringing those two pieces together will be something that we see, and we will see, well, people like yourself starting social enterprises. I mean, I would say that the Jandor movement is a social enterprise. You're, you know, seeking to help others on their journeys and to raise awareness for current issues in tourism. So yes, my recommendation is go for it if you're interested in starting up a social enterprise. And it, you know, from my own experience, like, we've grown Good Travel very slowly, and so it doesn't have to be something you know, throw everything into right away. It can be something that you build slowly on the side until you're kind of ready to do it as your full-time job. In terms of a number one piece of advice, if I think about why Good Travel has survived these past 7 years, it is because of our team. And one of my favorite African proverbs is, if you want to go fast, go alone. If you want to go far, go together. And that has absolutely been the case for Good Travel, having a team of four co-founders who are, you know, we're great friends above all. And we also have an amazing team of advisors and volunteers, and that has absolutely, you know, kept us going. And particularly over the last 9 months where we've been, over the last 6 months, we've been unable to pay staff properly. And so having that team of people who are really passionate about what we do, and, you know, the ability for us to all be able to do other work, but, you know, keep doing good travel on a volunteer basis has definitely, you know, held us together, both, you know, operationally and emotionally.
Oh, that is so sweet. Yeah, I mean, that is definitely the things, especially when you have an international business going around and the only thing you can work with your other partners or your friends in the team is that you have to connect virtually as well. And so,
yes.
Yeah, connect. Well, I mean, spiritually and virtually, you need to be together as a team. Yeah. So yeah, that's something very sweet to see for a lot of business that I see during COVID pandemic as well. And it hones down to what really matters to them. I mean, I saw the research that you did with Ina as well, because Ina used to be my lecturers. And so I saw that piece of research and I was so fascinated by that. And because the people who will be graduate by this year, they have more like higher level of anxieties and stress than mm-hmm. the people who just started their degrees. Because from what I see, New Zealand will have such a long recovery stage. So within like between 2 to 5 years or so. And so, but after that, like Gina said, tourism will always strive, because humans are craving for curiosities and travel is the mm-hmm. biggest meal for that.
Yeah, I mean, the students that we interviewed who were about to graduate, I would say that the majority of them were quite kind of realistic and pragmatic around the fact that, you know, for many of them, they might have to temporarily kind of exit the tourism industry, but they were pretty committed to returning to the tourism industry long term, which was really interesting. And I think, you know, one of the first questions I was asking students in the interviews was why they'd chosen to study tourism in the first place. And it was really interesting how many talked about, you know, a real passion for travel and for the tourism industry. And so there was that real kind of connection to the industry, which they didn't want to give up on. And, you know, they had enjoyed their studies and they did want to have a career in tourism long term. So for some of them, they were looking at, you know, temporarily exiting, but with that goal to return. For those who were in kind of their first or second year of study, they were much less worried because they were pretty confident about the resilience of the tourism industry. And in some cases, they were even feeling that a tourism degree might become more valuable as a result of COVID, because there have been traditionally quite a lot of negative perceptions around tourism degrees as kind of less academic, or also some just misunderstandings about, you know, what a tourism degree is. And because of COVID, obviously, there has been a lot more discussion in the media and in kind of popular news and that kind of thing around the need for tourism to rebuild and the impact of COVID on the tourism industry. So there is kind of greater awareness amongst the public around tourism management, as opposed to perhaps just kind of frontline roles and hospitality roles, which is, I think, what, you know, previously a lot of people associated with a tourism degree. So yeah, some people were feeling that actually a tourism degree would become even more valuable as a result of COVID, which was interesting. And then we also had a couple of students that we interviewed who were studying as a result of COVID. And I guess I will be adding to that cohort, because I'm returning to study primarily because of the result of the impact of COVID on good travel. I don't think I would be considering a PhD if, you know, if I was still working full time for good travel. So I kind of see this as a really great opportunity to study, to upskill, and then to be in a really good position when international tourism does restart.
Oh, that's so sweet. Yeah, definitely. I can totally feel you, and also for a lot of people as well who decided to go back to their studies, it gave me such a big realization as well, because a lot of my friends went back to do honors degree. Some of them went back to study master as well.
Interesting. Yeah.
But for me, because I'm very passionate about tourism, but I also see it's a very experience-based industry as well. That also your academic background is is one crucial part of your career path, but also all the experience, all the transferable skills that you collected along the way also empowers you to
Absolutely.
pursue the degree. So yeah, that's why I decided to venture out and then just test the water in other areas. Like for example, you may not be doing tourism, but you may be doing marketings or PRs or communications along the side. So that could be a part once you go back to tourism. It's such a valuable skills that you could add up back to the industry. So once everything is ready, get back on your feet. But yeah.
Definitely. And that was something we heard a lot in the interviews too, was, the transferability of skills that had been gained through the tourism degree, but also many students did have conjoint degrees. So they'd done, say a major in tourism management, but a minor in marketing. And so that was something they were feeling really good about, that would kind of help them if they needed to transfer those skills into other sectors.
Totally understand, because I feel like everyone who studied tourism, it sparks from the fact that they share the same passion with traveling, with seeing the world and all that kind of stuff. So yeah, including you as well. I can tell that you have been traveling all around the world to a lot of interesting places as well. But from all of that, what is your ultimate goals in your career path? Like if everything was laid out perfectly, and what is your ultimate dreams for it? Like from
Oh, what
everything
a
that you
lovely
do.
question.
Yeah.
I love having a good dream. Thinking about it a lot with my PhD topic, right? Because I'm going to be spending the next 3 years on one very small area and becoming a real expert in that small area. And so I think, oh, I mean, just a bit of background too. I also teach for the University for Peace, which is established by the United Nations. They're actually based in Costa
Oh,
Rica.
wow.
Yeah, but their mandate is all around, obviously, advocating for more peaceful societies, and they offer, a whole range of programs around that. So I teach their entrepreneurship, innovation, and social change course, and have the chance to talk with amazing students around the world. But so I've been kind of thinking, how can I bring that side of my life and the tourism side of my life together? And I think what ultimately it kind of boils down to for me is, how can international travel, or domestic travel actually, contribute to building more peaceful and inclusive societies? And I think, gosh, today is a great time to be talking about that, right? I mean,
Definitely.
globally, this is a big, if not the biggest issue of our time, is how do we bring people together and help people understand different perspectives and help people care about each other, and realize that they are part of a global community, and that we have to start thinking beyond our own communities to realizing that the impact that our actions have. My topic is still evolving, but it will be looking at how travel experiences can facilitate cross-cultural understanding and contribute to building global citizens. And so then long term, my dream is to translate that into action through good travel. And so it's something that we already do to some degree, but kind of based on, our own experiences and what we feel will contribute to that. So I'm really excited to have, some really solid research which can be used to create these experiences which can build global citizens. And I'm thinking of focusing specifically on children and youth, and really, how do we build the next generation of global citizens through travel experiences, which I think are a really unique way to connect with other cultures and to shift perspectives.
Yeah. Oh, that is such an amazing topic to do. Honestly, I mean, I'm amazed by that because the youth and young people, sometimes they a part of that they got neglected on the side when you're talking about traveling, because first of all, you need guardians or you need to organize groups and such, and it's under like more like a fixed system. So when it comes to the ways to create travel experience, and from what I see as well, so normally when you reach above 18, you have more of the control of how you want to generate your own travel experience, and your mindsets and everything that you have learned, it becomes the travel expectations and your understanding before you go to a place. So by educating young people and stuff and mold their mindset and keeps them socially conscious about their impacts when traveling, it's such an amazing idea. So yeah, it goes along so well with your business and what you're standing for as well. So I really love that. Well, thank you so much, Eliza. That's been such an amazing talk. Oh my God. I got to learn so much about volunteer tourism and everything behind your company as well. And all the best with your PhD. Thank you so much for spending the time today to talk about that. That's really amazing for me. So yeah.
Thank you so much for the opportunity, Katie. And it's been a really, lovely conversation and fun to dream and look ahead as well and reflect on where we've been too. So thank you and all the best with your podcast. I think it's a fantastic idea. And I look forward to listening to future episodes as well.
Thanks for joining me for this episode of the Jenna Movement. You can always catch us on iTunes and Spotify. Also, don't forget to follow us on Instagram and LinkedIn. I'm in the pool of amazing tourism professional community. And if you like this, don't forget to share and spread the word on your social media. My name is Katie Ho, and I'll see you next time. Bye!